It's 4 o'clock, so since we had to move up, I'm going to go ahead and get us started. I'm assuming that I'm kicking this over to DeCarlin.
Yes.
We're starting.
Yes, ma'am.
No, that was me kicking it to you.
Oh,
sorry.
Sorry.
Not yeah, cool.
I thought you were letting me know. Hey.
No. Well, I mean, yes. Both.
So, with us today is Robert Hickok from ETC. ETC is a company that we've used for our community survey for a couple of years. Yeah, for at least a decade. And so Robert will go over the survey, kind of give you that perspective from the survey company, and then staff will follow up.
All right.
So, Robert.
I appreciate that, DeCarlin. Can everybody hear me okay? I've been told I need to project, so I'll do my best. As DeCarlin said,
yes.
My name is Robert Hickok. I'm the representative senior project manager for ETC Institute. We're based in Olathe. We do a lot of work all over the country. This kind of gives you a footprint for where we've done. We do mainly government surveys, whether or not that's state, local, county. We also do transportation, economic development, employee surveys, you name it, ETC has probably done it. And I think we need to change that because we've now actually done surveys in all 50 states. Our agenda here, we're going to keep it pretty clear and pretty quick. We're going to focus on quickly the purpose and methodology of the survey, key areas of strength, the findings, how Columbia compares, trends in the data, top priorities for investment, other findings, summary, and open questions. That said, if any of the council has questions as we're going, please feel free to stop me or hold it to the end, whatever your preference is on questions. Purpose, it really varies from community to community, but these are the four main reasons why we find that people engage our company to do a community survey. One is to objectively assess satisfaction among residents instead of just hearing from the proverbial squeaky wheel or folks that say they represent their neighborhood or their community. You're actually hearing from the entire community, given that opportunity in a statistically valid survey to help determine priorities for community, measure trends, and also to compare your performance with other cities, both regionally and nationally. The survey itself was a 5-page survey. We had a goal of getting 800 surveys. We actually received 855 responses to the survey, which is really great. Demographics of the survey respondents accurately reflect the actual population of the city. So one of the things when we build the survey and when we look at the survey responses, we're trying to make sure that it's in keeping consistent with the demographics so that it actually really represents everyone there. This is a dispersion map that shows where all the responses actually came from. We were engaged, as I said, to do 800, to provide 800 responses. We actually had a sub-goal of having at least 100 from each ward, and that's consistent with what we've done in the past for Columbia. So you can kind of see the lowest amount was 111, the highest amount was 188 from the 6 different wards. Key areas of strength, there's a lot of words here, so I'm going to try not to regurgitate everything, but basically what we're looking at is, again, majority of residents rated the city as excellent or good place to work, live. 64% of them as an excellent or good place to work, which is 11% higher than the Plains regional average and 7% higher than the national average. So the Plains region covers 10 states. Generally what you think of in north and south from here would go Wisconsin, Minnesota, the Dakotas, Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, Illinois, Missouri. We're going to, as we get more into this, we'll show some charts that are a little bit more illustrative of the differences and the comparisons between your results and those of those other regions. For the most part, residents were satisfied with a lot of different city services, but the highest level of satisfaction included the quality of city parks and recreation programs and facilities at 66%, and city's electric services 59%, followed by customer service from city employees. I would say that's a really, it doesn't seem like a huge number, but in comparison, you'll see when we show later, to have a customer service rating from your city employees speaks volumes to your staff, their hiring, and the way that they care about their jobs, that they're providing excellent service to the community. Public safety services also ranked very high in terms of Columbia Fire Department in particular, with 83% satisfaction, how fast they responded to emergencies and effectiveness of safety prevention. The overall priority, as it says improvement here, it really should probably say investment. So one, we're going to talk a little bit later about how to, what the recommendations we took out from the survey in terms of future investment and focus of the city. And those are the two primary areas, the quality of city streets and quality of police and fire services. Really more on the police side. Again, a majority of the residents rated the city services as excellent, good, or neutral. This is kind of a typical chart that you'll see how we're reporting the data. And what we've done is you see in the blue and the purple on the left, those would be excellent and good. The gray is neutral. And then we combine the below average and poor together in the red color or some shade of pink, I guess. One of the things I want to comment here before we get into it is a lot of times when I'm working with clients, they will really try to focus on the red, which is understandable. Where are the people most, you know, most upset with service? Where are they rating us poorly? But I would tell you the biggest gains I've been able to see from clients consistently is when they try to focus a lot on the gray. So you have to put yourself in the shoes of somebody who took the time to fill out the survey only to say, well, I'm neutral. They didn't say, I don't know, I haven't had any exposure. They just said, I'm neutral. A lot of times the neutral response can be correlated with information. And we find that if you focus and have maybe on some of the finer points of the points of concern, you might have a better chance of moving the proverbial needle on the responses by focusing on the neutral, giving them more information, telling your story. Really, a lot of times, in particular, when we talk about police department, we talk about communications and things like that. Some of the interventions that you've made to help address homeless issues or police issues, those can take time, and people don't necessarily know what you're doing. So it's about making sure people are informed a lot of the time. So this is overall satisfaction with major city services, and you can see at the top, parks and electric services and customer service from city employees ranked at the highest. But even those, you still had about a third of your residents respond and say they're neutral. And then down at the bottom, their quality of city streets and enforcement of codes and ordinances, those rated the lowest in terms of overall satisfaction and the most dissatisfied. Looking at customer service from city employees, again, we've already mentioned this a little bit, so I don't need to go into all of those, but you can kind of see how it's fairly consistent among all of those five categories, with only 15% being dissatisfied or very dissatisfied with those. But still, a third of your citizens are saying they're neutral. So maybe you're not getting word out about some of these things and reporting that back out. Satisfaction with public safety. And again, I'm sorry for some of those that are in the back. These are, you know, there's a lot of information kind of put in here, but in dealing with public safety, you can see ratings, responses for the fire department at the top, very satisfied. You get down at the bottom of city's efforts to prevent crime, very low response. In fact, with over a majority of the respondents gave it a dissatisfied or very dissatisfied rating. Now, is that really true what's going on, or would the police department be able to say, hey, we're doing a lot of things to prevent crime, but maybe people just don't understand what we're trying to do, and maybe if we're higher profile, we can cut into those numbers. Satisfaction with maintenance and public works. Again, maintenance of street signs, the maintenance of city buildings, snow removal, all of those rank fairly well. You do see some higher level of concern in the response at the bottom with the maintenance of city streets and condition of city sidewalks adjacent to streets. All of those had a significant level of dissatisfied. I would interject, too, though, that keep in mind this is just a snapshot in time. It doesn't necessarily tell the whole story. What it does provide is the opportunity to identify areas of concern and to have conversations with your staff and with the community, follow-up conversations. In other words, you're not going to want to base all of your actions just on one rating for one question. You're going to want to understand that, you know, what is the staff been trying to do? What have we as a council been trying to do? And what are our priorities moving forward to try to address that? And in a lot of cases, identifying citizens that are passionate about it and having citizen groups and organizations plugged into the problem-solving process is really, really helpful. You see some very high rankings in terms of city parks, one of the more positive areas. And again, you still have that high neutral. But a number of walking and biking trails and how close neighborhood parks are to home, very, very high level of satisfaction. You do see terms of priority here, or at least the level of satisfaction, the city's youth and teen programs at the bottom, and along with the aquatic facilities. So now we're going to look at not just your response, but we're going to look at how you compare. So every 18 months, ETC does a national survey, and we also do regional surveys, 10 different regional surveys across the country. And as I mentioned before, you're being compared to the other folks from the Plains region, which is those 10 states that I mentioned. You look at overall, and you've seen some dips, no doubt, when we look at some of the trends and things like that. But keep in mind, when you look at the comparisons, you're actually still doing fairly well in a lot of instances. So Columbia rated higher than the Plains region average in 21 of 48, so almost half of the areas you're above the regional average. And when you look at ratings for the national average, you're above the national average in 16 of 48 areas, and significantly higher than the national average in 15 of those 16. So now we'll look at this. The Columbia is in the purple. It seems to me that should be black or gold. I don't know, just something to do with the location. Maybe we'll fix that next time. But in the purple, the Plains region, and the red sort of pink hash color, and then the U.S. average in gold or yellow. So as a place to work, you can see at the top, and as a place to live, you're above those other averages. You do look at you get down below, there seems to be a higher level of disconnect. You're kind of with it halfway through, but then, you know, it's a place to buy a home. You're right in keeping with the averages. It does become a little bit of a point of concern, perhaps, when you look at the overall appearance of the city and you look at the overall value of city taxes and fees. But again, keep in mind, even though that's a really low number, that's general dissatisfaction everywhere throughout the country. So it's not just you when you look at that final area of, yes, it's super low and we'd all like all of them to be higher, but when you compare them to the averages, that's just one of those things. I don't think that cities are necessarily great at trumpeting their successes and letting people know how they're really cracking down on dollars spent, but overall, not bad comparisons.
Robert, before you go on,
yes.
Nick had a question.
And this is about the comparisons, and you talked about a snapshot of time and so
yes.
forth. So I'm wondering about the time frame in which we're being compared. Our comparison, of course, is when our numbers are when our survey was done. Is that, are we talking about a similar time period or time range
yes,
for
our,
the others as well that we're being compared to?
Yes, we do update these regional and national numbers every 18 months. So the last time that was done was in February of 2024. And then we did the survey in
August,
September. So you're within 6 months or so of the data. Good question. Okay, so then moving on, again, we're comparing the same colors and comparisons. Parks. This is overall different services. So you can see how kind of in the middle there where I mentioned before that was a really good number for customer service. I didn't just make that up. Your numbers of 58.1 compared to 42% and under 40% in terms of the national average. So really, when you look at the quality of parks, quality of electric services, customer service from city staff, all of those are significantly above those averages and show that you're making a real effort to emphasize those areas. You do start seeing some lagging a little bit when you get down to quality of police and fire services with 72%, 65% for the comparisons, and you're 48.1. But even down below, you're still fairly close to some of these other numbers. We look at public safety in particular. Now, that's one where you're going to see about halfway through or partway through there, you're going to see, yeah, we're not trending as well. But at the start, the quality of the fire department related to fire department, those numbers are very good. When you look at overall response comparisons to other communities, you're lagging behind in pretty much every category as it relates to efforts to prevent crime, visibility of police in neighborhoods. Again, it's just a starting point. It's that snapshot in time. It doesn't mean you're not making efforts to impact those numbers that you may have and they may not have shown up yet.
Robert, I'm going to ask a question too. On some of the questions in their survey, there was an open-ended where people could kind of help us understand.
Yes.
Are you going to get into that part as part
we
of the
are.
Presentation?
We are. Yeah, okay. At the end, we're going to go through some of the summary of the comments that
Perfect.
People had an opportunity, and I believe that's part of what DeCarlin's going to talk about too in his follow-up.
Steps,
so,
yeah. Yep. Just wanted to make sure. Thanks.
We'll get there. I have to bore you first with all this stuff before we get to
okay.
the good stuff. Maintenance and public works ratings, you can see here, very strong. I mean, really across the board. And yet, you know, you still see when you get maintenance of city streets, even though you're at 74.6%, it's still an area of concern when you're looking at another context. But you look at, you know, this is sort of the what I call the cafeteria food of city services. Everybody's going to complain about it no matter how good it is, no matter what you do. They have to have something to kind of complain about a little bit. So, but your numbers, when you look at maintenance of some of these areas, snow removal on streets, when you look at landscaping appearance of public areas, all of those rated very, very well in comparison to the region nationally. So now we're going to get into some trends of what we've seen between your last survey, which is in 2019, and the 2024 survey. In this case, the 2019 numbers are in gray, and your latest survey numbers are in purple. Really, you can kind of see there's been an adjustment here pretty much across the board in all of these where, you know, there's been some movement down compared to if you look at quality of parks and rec programs, for example, was at 86%, now it's at 66%. What's the story behind that? That's really the follow-up on these. No city goes, you know, without some issues or questions about different services. And really what it's meant to do is to provide an opportunity to engage, as I said before, for council to engage your staff, for staff to engage with you, the community, to say, okay, well, we don't want this in the next survey we do, whether it's 2025 or 2026. We don't really want to see a continuation of that trend. So what can we do in the meantime to impact some of those numbers? And I would also point out, and it's not an excuse, but post-COVID, we did have, you know, a lot of communities that had some adjustments in their numbers, very similar to what you're seeing here. So Columbia is not alone in some of these trends. Again, here's with public safety, and again, you maintain pretty stable with the fire department responses at the top. You do, however, get to the bottom, and you look at that. City's efforts to prevent crime, I would say that really jumps off the page, and you've seen that on several slides as a point where you want to have engagement in that conversation. Okay, what are we really doing? You know, maybe the community needs to know what we're doing, and we're not telling that story yet. Visibility of police in the neighborhood, that's probably one that almost always you're going to see of police services. Almost everywhere I do surveys, that number will be somewhat low.
We got a question, Robert.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm trying to get an idea of what the question is related to visibility of police in my neighborhood. Is that how the question was stated?
I think so, pretty much. You know, how satisfied are you with the visibility of police in my neighborhood in terms of preventing, in the context of preventing crime?
Okay. So the implication is that people would like more police in their neighborhood, or I get dissatisfied. I don't get.
Yeah, do you want to see them or not want to see them?
It's not nearly enough to find that there could be a range in interpretation of what satisfaction is on that.
Most likely it's the visibility. It's the idea of seeing more police.
They would like to see
yeah.
more.
And that's something you see pretty standard. A lot of cities hear about, you know, it's always the narrative, I don't see a police officer on my street. But usually when a police officer on your street, there's usually something going on in your street.
That's it seems to fit with the others.
Years ago, a lot of cities, you know, addressed the issue of take-home cars with their officers to have more visibility, to see they could have a car in their driveway that says police, that somehow would deter some of the neighborhoods. Just like putting signs up for a neighborhood watch or some of those, I think it's probably viewing it in that area.
It's
Brian
true.
Has the actual question, I think.
So the question was, please write your satisfaction with the quality of the following. And the first one is the visibility of police in my neighborhood. And then the second one is the visibility of police downtown. mm-hmm. and you rated it as very satisfied, satisfied, neutral, dissatisfied, or very dissatisfied?
Good questions. Like what I'm hearing, like what I'll hear, one of the things I'll hear in my ward, because we have so many parks, is it used to be so nice to be able to see the police in the parks, that true community policing model. And right now, with our limited number of police, there's only so much that they can do. So.
So perceptions of safety here, again, you see you were at 92% for how safe you feel in your neighborhood during the day, 92% compared to 84%. You get down below, the biggest shift is obviously at the end in terms of city parks, which you just mentioned, which went from 58% to 38%, so about a 28% drop.
And Robert, when you're surveying other communities on this, the overall feeling of safety, is that a trend that's happening in all cities, or are you?
Honestly, I think of a certain size cities, I think when you start getting about your size, yeah, there's more of that concern. It's not just your community, but there are some smaller communities that have not seen as much of an impact. But I think some of the issues surrounding safety, public safety, and crime have impacted our larger cities probably a little bit more than some of the smaller ones. Yeah. And it really just depends, though.
Thank you.
Since 2019, again, we're looking at here, we're looking at city maintenance and public works. I do remember you were still, even though it went down 6%, the maintenance of city streets, if we were to back up comparatively, you're doing well compared to the other averages in terms of how other cities are doing. So it still may not be as bleak as it may appear on some of these. Snow removal on city streets. It could be the timing of the year. We're doing it in the late summer. Not really sure. Again, enforcement of property maintenance codes, that was a higher end. You've seen a substantial decrease in those three areas.
Would you mind going back to the landscaping? Back one slide. Landscaping appearance of public areas along city streets. Can you share a little bit about how that question was asked?
So the question is under public works section. Please rate your satisfaction with the quality of the following. Condition of, landscaping / appearance of public areas along city streets. It's grouped with condition of sidewalks, satisfaction with tree trimming, street lighting.
Thank you. Street lighting too. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Again, with maintenance codes, you can see, as I mentioned, all these three areas showed a significant decrease. Parks and recreation, again, almost across the board, you're seeing some adjustments downward to these numbers. And again, I have to reiterate it. It doesn't necessarily mean you're at a bad stage. It's just you're not where you were at one time, and you probably want to understand better, what causes that and how could you move forward to move the needle back the right direction. One of the things I really want to emphasize here, and something that ETC developed, was something called an Important Satisfaction Index. The Important Satisfaction Index is a way of evaluating the feedback from citizens to correlate not only if somebody's dissatisfied with a particular service, but how important it is to them. Why do that? Well, I'll give you the example. So let's say there was a question about parks, programs, or services, and I was asked as a citizen to rate the dog park. And I might say, well, I took Buster to the dog park. I had a horrible experience. These other bigger dogs chased poor little Buster, around. It was bad. I'm very dissatisfied with Columbia's dog park. Okay, well, if that's all you ask, then you might take away from that, hey, we need to fix the dog park. Maybe have a dog park for little dogs. We really need to invest in the dog park. But if you have a follow-up question and you correlate it, yes, I'm unhappy, I'm dissatisfied, but is it important to me? I might say no. it's not important. I'd much rather have you focus on youth programs or senior programs than the dog park. I mean, I know I'm unhappy, but that doesn't mean you have to do anything about it. I want you to spend your limited resources on other areas, not that. So that's sort of the philosophy behind what we've done at ETC. So we're going to see a lot of data. Don't worry. I'm not going to read every line on every page. We're going to move forward. But the takeaway here, what you're seeing is, again, what are the most important in terms of, in this particular case, there's 14 different items that are being rated. You had number one being city quality of city streets, and number two being quality of police and fire services. And we're going to get into public safety more in a minute. But then you see what's the satisfaction rank. So obviously very low. The bottom of satisfaction was quality of city streets. And, you know, that basic service. And so that rises to the top as a very high priority. And this is what we usually talk about. Early on, I mentioned improvement. It's not necessarily having to improve something like fire services, but it can be we want to maintain some of the services. So it's not always a case of what's the problem and how to which one do I need to fix. Sometimes it might be, hey, I'm doing really well at something and I want you to maintain that. In this particular instance, you see that the satisfaction rank for police and fire services is pretty middle of the pack. But in terms of importance, they rank that their number one. Doesn't mean that these other areas, the, you know, enforcement of codes and ordinances, the quality of city services, any of those other items, it doesn't mean those are not important. Even a medium priority item is something that you might want to focus on. But in terms of what the citizens are telling us is if you want to see the greatest response from the citizen to your investment, show them how you're what you're doing to address the quality of city streets and quality of police and fire services. So there's several of these that are kind of like that. You can see the top five all came up. Oh, I apologize.
Sorry. Yeah, I know I've seen a few by ward graphs. I'm wondering if you have a by ward breakdown on importance.
Any of the questions that we had, we can produce those.
Yeah, it would be great to have that information so we know, like, in
that,
each
would that be something
segment,
available in the dashboard that's built?
What they care about the most.
Yeah, one of the things that we're providing for Columbia this time around we haven't done in the past is we've now developed, ETC has developed something called a data dashboard. It's an interactive data analysis tool that you can make available, you know, for the whole community, or, and that's my understanding of what the intent would be. The dashboard will have a number of different areas. If we can click on it real quick, we just show you. So it'll look like this. When we say this is for Montrose, Colorado, I think it is. You'll be able to look at the city's performance, who responded to the survey. You'll be able to map that, so you can say, I want to map where the concern level of. I mean, you can drill down to. I would like to know how safe women over the age of 50 feel in terms of their neighborhood. How safe do you feel in your neighborhood? And I want to see where the problem is. And then you can, unfortunately, it's not interactive to correlate it, but you can also ask a secondary question. I want to look at that same age group. How satisfied are they with streetlights? Then a picture, when you map that, it starts to show you, oh, okay, the map for this one is similar to that. So maybe we need to engage our electric utility about putting more streetlights strategically in this neighborhood where it would really, you know, possibly, you know, move the public perception in a positive way. So we'll do the mapping, the investment priorities we talked about, and then the last one was, keeps going away. Anyway, I think you got the picture there.
Did you want it back?
No, it's fine. So within public safety, you can see here top five areas, all jumped off the charts, very important. So there were 12 items here. The most important and the least satisfied was with efforts to prevent crime. There's a perception, however valid, that the residents are reacting to, that are concerned about how the city is what the city is doing to prevent crime. I guarantee you, senior police chief, if we ask the police department, they can tell you all kinds of things we're doing to prevent crime. And it's about sometimes just telling that story and making sure that the public understands that, and that you agree on, well, what metrics are we going to use to track that? What are we going to be able to, how do we tell our story in terms of an objective, you know, data set? Okay. Now we look at city maintenance, public works, again, the city streets, condition of sidewalks, and snow removal were the top three. Again, it doesn't mean that an item that's a high priority, adjacency of city street lighting or some of those other items, it doesn't mean that's not important. It just means it didn't rise to that higher level of concern. This is for parks and recreation. So the four items that rose, and again, unlike some of the others where you had a very high priority, here you didn't have anything that really, which makes sense because your overall satisfaction with the park services you saw was pretty high still, even though it went down a little bit. From the last survey, it's still very high. So you can see, though, that in terms of the priority from the citizens, the youth and teen programs, adult and senior citizen programs, maintenance of city parks, and aquatic facilities had that list. So some of our other findings, we had a couple other questions. We're not going to get into the detail for this, but these are the two of the questions where we really opened it up for city comments, like question 31, do you have any other comments or suggestions you'd like to share? So the survey report, I know DeCarlin's going to get into a lot of more of the detail of some of these, and I'm just asked to do an overview. So there was considerable focus on these three areas, homeless and panhandling. Approximately 201 out of 524 response comments had a reference to this issue. When you look at public safety, crime prevention, about 157 out of the 524 included a reference to crime, public safety, gun violence, or similar phrasing. And then litter, code enforcement, again, a lesser number by you know, for sure, but still significant number, 65 out of 524. Include references to litter, trash, cleanup, dirty, or something similar to that. So in summary here, you can kind of see where we've been in this presentation. Majority of residents are, you know, rated the city excellent or good place to work and live. Majority of residents rated city services as excellent, good, or neutral. You're higher in a lot of categories nationally and regionally in overall satisfaction, some of those other items that we talked about. Top priorities include quality of city streets, public safety, code enforcement, quality of parks, recreation program facilities. So the open comments really focus on homelessness, crime, and cleanliness if you were to group those areas. With that, I'm open to any more questions you have before we turn that over to, I thought it was going to be, he was queued up, maybe not. No, the city manager is going to, has a presentation to go over as well.
I think I just have one question for Robert, and I think a few for that. I know that there was also a link available for people to fill out the survey that, like, from our website. That's not included necessarily in that 855, is that correct?
No, it would be. And I skipped over that, and I probably shouldn't have. The methodology, this was a survey sent to residents, but also was available online. And so that 855 would include a mixture of people who responded to the hard copy and mailed it back in a no postage required envelope, and those that went online and filled that out.
Okay. All right. So I've got Nick, and then Roy, I don't know how to hand up. And then Valerie, sorry. I'm hiding behind Nick.
Sorry.
Okay. No.
Well, I have two questions. One, with the comments that were made, are we able to correlate the comments with their ratings? In other words, if someone made this comment about litter in particular, can we correlate that comment to the rating?
No, unfortunately.
Okay. And I know you've got, it's 95% confidence of, I can't remember how you...
There's a margin of error at a confidence level. So it's, in yours was like 3.5 or 3.3%. Margin of error at a 95% confidence level. That means if you did it 100 times, 95% of the time it would be in that margin of error.
Okay. So do we have any groups within the city demographically that are underrepresented in responses?
No. The answer to that is no, because we work to make sure that we balance them with the census data. So in terms of accuracy, you know, that's what we do to make sure it's valid, and it has to be that way, because if you, for example, if you just did an online survey and whoever wanted to fill it out could fill it out, it's not going to be replicatable because you don't know, there's no control factor there to make it statistically valid, because you could have 50% of the population and 80% of the survey responses could be from that other small group.
That was a great segue into my questions, because mine was about getting the survey out. I know that we sent out 4,000, and when we're talking about census data, we know that some people don't always reply to those census data information or surveys. So how do we make sure, how are you as the person who's distributing this, making sure that the same 4,000 households are not the only ones that's receiving the survey?
Well, there's two different potential situations. We can get a response from somebody who was in the random survey, which we'll know because they have to give an address related to that. And that's part of our quality assurance. We're making sure that we're only taking responses inside the city limits of Columbia, and we're making sure that one household doesn't stuff the proverbial ballot box by putting in 15 or 20 responses. So we would only do one in that case. So we control it that way. The other aspect of what you're talking about, again, we look at the, when we buy the data, so we have all the addresses. If there's a significant number, and I don't think there was in this case, but if there's a significant number of people who filled it out that went online, got a hold of the link and filled it out online, even though they weren't part of our sample, sometimes we can gather that data separately and report that if it's a significant number.
Right. When I looked at the maps, they're in the same areas every time of the return of the surveys, which is why I asked that question. So heavy in specific areas.
Well, some of the areas of the community responded more to, more than others. But I think for the sake of trying to make sure everybody was represented throughout the community is why we had that goal of at least 100 responses per ward. And then, as I'm trying to say, we also do work looking at, when we acquire the data, we try to make sure we're looking at developing that balance of different demographic groups so that it's well represented. And that can be, by ethnicity, it can be renter versus owning property, it can be a lot of those different factors. In fact, if there's something like that you want us to be able to do, we can run what's called a crosstab. Actually, you'll have the ability with the dashboard to do crosstabs yourself. So let's say you wanted to know, well, how I'd like to compare how satisfied people are that own their property versus those people that are renting their property. The system would allow you to run that data and compare responses for each of the questions.
Okay. And then my final question is, in every city, do you differentiate, like, or ask about downtown specifically versus the community as a whole?
We every survey is a little bit different, so it just depends on the priorities of the community. So we, as you can see, a lot of the questions that we're using are benchmark questions that we compare to other regions and the national. So to that extent, you're going to have similar questions, otherwise you can't make the comparisons. But we do have specific questions that can be tailor-made, and we did that in your case too. We had, because this was a new survey from what we developed 4 years ago. It's changed fairly significantly from what we had 4 years ago. It still has a lot of the same questions, but some of the areas of emphasis are different. So to answer your question, if a community identified a certain area of their town, like their downtown, and wanted to know what people really thought about the downtown. Did they visit the downtown? Did they feel safe in the downtown? You know, those are all questions that cities can ask. And we're certainly willing to help the community look at the next time we do a survey again, whether or not that's next year or 2 years, whenever you decide to do your next survey, we can work with you to make sure you have questions like that are represented in the survey.
Yeah, I think Roy covered my question pretty well. I really do think that one of the strengths of this survey is the way that the outreach for the survey is randomized, mm-hmm. And the scientific approach to surveying. One of my concerns was the link and how that's made available. You talked about, you know, how you can treat the data if it looks like the link is used in a, I guess, less randomized fashion.
Right.
How was the link shared online? Was it, I don't know, searchable? And was it publicized?
The outreach is primarily through the initial, we have a cover letter from the city that explains this is important, this is what we're doing. Please take the survey. You can do it either by filling out the hard copy attached to the letter, to the cover letter, or go online with this link. And usually that's, you know, that's, in most cases, that's the amount that we will do. The city can a lot of times publicize the existence of the survey and put out information that says, hey, this is coming, it's really important to the city. If you get it, it's a random survey, so not everybody's going to get it. But if you get it, please fill it out. And so we can do that. I don't think we did.
Ryan, did we put it out online?
So we did have, it linked to a duplicate of the survey. That was so, to maintain the validity of the sample, mm-hmm. that link was pure to what was in the letter that was issued to the addresses that it was mailed to. The link that we had on our website was if someone voluntarily wanted to take it. I don't know if there was a response to that or not. You said it was
I'll have
minimal.
To check. I have not. Yeah, I've not heard that it was a significant number, but I will have to ask.
But that keeps the
and so that link, the responses to that link would not have been included in the 850.
Correct. Exactly.
Okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
Great. Sounds reasonable.
Good.
Lisa, did you have your hand up too?
The randomized piece. So ditto to that, and I think that this is an incredible opportunity for us to hone in and focus on together on making our community better. I think this might sound a little negative and heavy. I think that many of us have already heard this, but to hear that how the survey was conducted adds to me just excitement for the opportunity for us to be able to do something about some of these issues.
I agree.
And then Nick, and then I know I want to get to the staff.
Just curious about how to interpret some things that seem to be conflicting with one another. For instance, on page 17, quality of city streets is rated at 28.8% on number 19. The maintenance of city streets is at roughly 30% and then 75%. What are we to make of those results that seem to be conflict with one another?
Well, slightly different. I mean,
yeah.
Quality of city streets and maintenance of city streets, but I'd have to look into it more in depth specifically, and Brian can. No, he's taking notes, so we can follow up and see if there's anything else we might infer, you know, from that comparison.
I think it's important to note this is the first time using this particular instrument, so it was fully new from what had been used by the city for many, many years. So I think we went into this knowing that based after this first year that we would want to tweak it in certain ways to clarify things like you're asking or to dig deeper in certain areas that we didn't think were going to come out in the survey, but have, and we want to, you know, go deeper into that particular topic in subsequent years.
And I think some of it will be the value that you'll see from the dashboard. Very excited about that. So, and I've told Brian that once we roll out the dashboard, we can provide some training webinars to the city. So if it's your staff or your council, if somebody wants to do that, I can't do individual ones, but I can do group some training. So that you can it's pretty simple. It's very intuitive. If I can figure it out, you can probably figure it out. So it's this clicking and kind of exploring. But it will allow you to, and I've worked with companies with communities that have done surveys a lot, but they've never really been able to dig as much into the detail as they can do now with that. And I think one of the power of that is in the mapping, so that you can see, okay, we know this is happening, but where specifically are people really concerned about city streets and quality of city streets? So you can map that in, you know, through the dashboard. We have stagnant maps as an attachment that you got, but being able to plug in, you know, certain areas to frame where you want it to analyze the data and to bring that up, and then to be able to say, okay, but is that mostly upon, you know, people in an older demographic or a younger demographic, or, you know, all of that. If you like to do the analysis, I think you'll really be pleased with the dashboard.
The dashboard is a new resource that we haven't had.
Yeah. Exactly.
And what's the timing on that?
It usually takes about a month to, you know, to 45 days, 30 to 45 days for us to get up. We wait until this is over, so it's been presented, and then develop it, because there can always be some changes. So that's kind of the path we're on.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, a couple of questions. How long will the dashboard viewer be up? Does that stay live until the next survey?
Yeah, it stays up and active as long as you want it. We do have a built-in feature that tells you if the data is becoming outdated or not.
Nice.
So it'll still be accessible, but at some point it might, you know, after so many years, it's going to say your data is out, you know, which is partially, you know, a plug for us, you know, for business, but honestly, it's a true status of the, you know, data doesn't stay viable forever, obviously, with changes you have in your community.
We want a warning if we're misusing our data.
Sorry?
I said we want a warning if we're misusing our data.
Yes, and it does do that. It'll also tell you if you're searching for something where it's not a valid number, like, you know, there's five responses. Okay, that's not enough to. So it has an ability to tell you whether or not your pool is big enough to be a valid search, or if it's really not a valid search because it doesn't have very many responses.
Yeah, I appreciate that. The other question I had, Nick brought up data on the short answer, and you didn't have, I guess you couldn't link those to responses. What kind of data do we have that's linked to short answer?
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble hearing.
The comments.
How do you link that to
the written form comments?
Oh. Yeah, and unfortunately, the comments are just, you know, we're not able to link the comments back to specific people. And if we were, I mean, it becomes one of those issues of confidentiality of the data, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's our primary responsibility to those that filled it out, is to keep it, you know, keep it confidential. Now, sometimes somebody will do a comment and it almost identifies them, because you all work with those people and you know that you've heard that somewhere before. You know, and unfortunately, you know, we can't address that.
Yeah, I'm not looking to figure out.
Right.
I want it to remain anonymous, but it's nice to understand, like, a majority of these comments relating to this topic, like, generally where.
Right.
That's okay.
And when you have, you know, 200 out of 524 are talking about that.
Yeah,
it's on their mind, whether, you know, it doesn't give you the context of what level of concern they have, but chances are those areas are not praising the situation. They're all, most of these are concerns.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Okay, last one, and then I want to get to what we're doing.
Do we have an idea of how many people actually made comments? In other words, do we have a certain subset that made multiple comments, or what? I assume that these are not all, 524 comments, not necessarily 524 respondents.
No, they would be individual respondents.
Well,
but they have an opportunity.
A respondent could respond to both of those questions.
True.
Yeah. So
true.
Yeah, okay.
Is that, I'm sorry, I wasn't following what you meant, but yeah, that's true.
That happens to me sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, there was just two open questions. As opposed to multiple.
Yeah. And as a side note, we did not have those open questions, did not exist in the prior survey instrument.
Right.
So.
Right. All right. So I would really love, and I think all of us would, okay, what is it? You know, this shows us, you know, how the community was thinking, or, you know, a sampling of our community was thinking at this point in time in August. And I know that we have been working on some of these issues that came out, especially in the comments. But I think we want to hear from the professionals on staff on what ideas they have and what they need from us.
Yeah, that's a great segue. And I think Robert kind of hit it when he talked about, you know, communications. And, you know, we do not do a good job of telling our story. And when you don't tell your story, the narrative becomes somebody else's narrative. And so when we looked at the survey and we tried to say, okay, so what are we doing now? And what's staff's recommendations on some of the things we can do moving into the future? And so we go ahead, go to the next. So we broke it up by the three areas that we got the most concerns for, and that's homelessness, public safety and crime prevention, litter and code enforcement. And so we're going to give an overview of what we're doing. If you have a question, please ask, interrupt, say, wait a minute. I got the department directors who are responsible for, you know, implementation of the things we're working on. And so this will be an opportunity for that engagement and that conversation. So when we talked about, you know, homelessness and, you know, what are some of the things we're doing, one of the things we know is, you know, how do you end? It's housing. And we know that in Columbia we have a lack of overall housing, but especially in our affordable range. And so we've conducted a housing study. We developed the DIVERT program. That's an opportunity for us to connect those residents who have needs with a social service person who can kind of get them to that resource. We created the homeless outreach team that allowed us to have officers that were going out and engage in the homeless community to have those conversations of what can we do in order to help, what are some of your needs are, to make sure that officers are being able to respond. We expanded hours of room at the inn. At one point, it was wintertime going from church to church. We now have a permanent location, and it's all year round. And so it's an opportunity to make sure that we have the hours to provide that resource to our residents. And then we participate with the Boone County Coalition to End Homelessness and having those regular meetings to talk about those agencies that are out providing that service. It's extremely important. And that's how we know exactly what we are doing, what can we do, and hear from those agencies that are providing that service. Are there any questions about our ongoing or...
We want to do that, maybe the whole program, and then ask questions after.
Betsy has a question.
How do we get information about all these, and not what you're doing, but how many people do you serve? What's happening with the Boone County Coalition to End Homelessness? Mm-hmm. It might be nice at their meeting, but do we get a yearly report or a biannual report, or what?
So
how do we know what's going on?
And Carrie, step in if I miss anything. The Boone County Coalition and Homelessness, that's a group of agencies and individuals that are committed to working with persons experiencing homelessness. And one of the key things they do is the coordinated entry, as well as they do the case conferencing to actually move someone through the spectrum of to housing. So they do the case conferencing for the housing vouchers, and they will discuss, like, the individual, this voucher is available, this person has a spot. They actually move them into housing as part of the work that they do. We shared a look back of the numbers from that coalition. It was like a year in review. Of homelessness, and those, they also maintain the list. When we talk about the number of people who are on the list, they maintain that list, and it's the number of families who are waiting for housing, individuals, veterans. They are the keepers of the list.
So how do the citizens in Columbia know about that information?
Carrie, do you have?
There's a website.
Okay.
So if they go to the website, they can look for it?
Yeah, Boone County Coalition.
Okay.
BCCEH.org.
Okay. So other than that, there's no PR about this. There's nothing that goes out. So, I mean, people that just complain about this, then if they want to go and search for this on the Public Health website, they can find it.
It's not on the Public Health website, but it's on the Boone County Coalition to End Homelessness website. The numbers are.
Okay. All right.
I think that gets to your point about communication and needing to get out the information. Yeah, Lisa.
Yeah, yes. I was just thinking that too. Like, are the numbers going up? Are they going down? We don't, you know.
Oh, they're going up. Yes.
Yeah. Because we're getting more.
We have twice as many families as we had at the beginning of the year.
So I think that's also helpful information for the community and for council to know.
And we're saying our families, not just individuals.
Households.
Households.
No. Families. So households have more than doubled, but families, yeah, way more.
Right. So I know I've seen the number of families experiencing homeless and the different trends for chronic homelessness and unhoused homelessness from your website. And I'm not sure if this is, like, maybe I need to spend more time looking at it, or maybe it's not there. I think part of that, you know, the data is really bleak, and that is a national thing. We understand that. The data is really bleak, and I think that even people looking at the data, you know, the first response I get is, oh my God, this is a big problem. Do you have somewhere on that website, like, the numbers of persons you've served, like, completely separate from any identifying information, just this many people were connected, here's how we've increased our efforts? I think that would be helpful to pair with that data that looks so bleak.
I am just thinking about the number of referrals and the number of open referrals that we have, and that's correlated to the number of vouchers that we have available. And the number of vouchers that we have available hasn't gone up.
Yeah. Well, in the monthly report, there's a report of how many have been housed. So
yes,
you've got how many people remain on the by name list, how many fewer, how many more. There's a good bit of data that way, and I don't know whether the monthly reports show up that way on the website, Carrie, but you can see that on a monthly basis, the effectiveness there. I just point out one other thing. Each one of these groups who adds to the data that's there have their own data as well. So, and that data is reported to Public Health and Human Services. That's those that are funded by the city. So city funds for services, and then the agencies report back to the city what those results have been.
Yeah, and so one of the things that kind of goes back to the communication part, and so it may be an opportunity for us to have a link to this on our city's website, have a link to some of the agencies that are providing services, mm-hmm. so that people can see exactly what's available in our community. And so that's kind of what helped get the word out for looking at some of the metrics of what's being done. You know, maybe it's something that our agencies that are supporting, where they can kind of give reports of, you know, how many people they've serviced or at some magnitude, in order for us to kind of collect that to say, okay, here's what we know is being done. But I think, you know, what Carrie and Rebecca is looking at is that from all the things that we're seeing, there is a significant issue in our community, and it's not just the unhoused individuals, but it's also our families that we see at either the Welcome Inn or at the Red Roof Inn or some of our extended stay hotels, you know, people who are couch surfing, and we know that's a significant number. And so that's really something that we have to kind of make sure that we're looking at.
Yeah. Betsy's got a question, and then, yes, we'll go on to other things you think we could do as well.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, because I didn't mean to put the Public Health Department on the spot, but all of these, like, you know, the DIVERT program sounds like a lovely name, but, like, what exactly is that? I mean, I know what it is, but do the citizens know what that is? The homeless outreach team or your HOT team, how many people do they actually interact with? And I realize some of it's a problem to have to do all the statistics when you're actually out there doing the work. So it's like, how much paperwork do I have to do when I'm really just talking to these guys trying to sort of get them places? But I think maybe all of that would be helpful to say, we don't just have this team. You know, they talked to 20 people today and we're able to refer three of them, or whatever is the appropriate information, because it's great to have all this, but if this isn't pushed out, and I don't think a lot of people are going to go to the website, they're just going to complain.
Right, and so remember the DIVERT program has been around for, has it been 6 months yet?
Oh, it's been over a year.
Over a year. Mm-hmm. And but we do a report on that monthly that kind of shows exactly what's being done, how many people are being.
And that's on the Public Health website too?
It goes out to City Council. I'm not sure
yes,
if it's on the
it's
website.
It's just shared with Council.
Yeah, so.
Okay.
Is that the mini court report that we're getting?
Oh, I'm sorry?
It's part of the Munich court report.
No, there's a separate report that is just from a different effort. And so one of the things what we're talking about doing is for that communication piece is making sure that being able to put that information out publicly so residents can't see it. And so that's our next step in our process.
I think that'd be helpful.
Yes.
I think that's on your next slide.
Well, you just like great segue, right?
Absolutely. One of the things that kind of going back to the talking to our residents, it's having focus groups. We can kind of bring residents in to talk about this concern in our community and what should our efforts be, what should our efforts look like, and how do we engage those residents who may have concerns can see exactly what's being done. And so it's holding focus group. One of the things that I know we've had a lot of complaints about is restrooms downtown or restrooms in certain parts of our community. So maybe one of the things we could do is add public restrooms. I think Nick saw the National League of Cities, the
Portland Loo.
Which is quite a few communities. Augment our staff to support the homeless outreach team, so that's adding more to that team. Expanding the DIVERT program, so that's adding more to our DIVERT program. Creating a homeless advisory board. I want to say that advisory board is made up of people that have either are experiencing or have experience, so we can hear from those who've kind of gone through it to kind of help us understand what some of our efforts could be in order to support. And I think that's one of the things we saw in, when we went out to Milwaukee. That was one of the things that they were doing in order to actually reach out to some of their residents. And incentivize housing options, and this is something that you will kind of hear a little bit more as we talk about the housing study and some of the things that comes out of, some of the things we can do in order to help get our landlords to look at how can they actually be more at offering affordable housing, and then implement the Ride Home program. And so this is not going to someone saying, hey, we want to move you out of town, but a lot of times we know that there are people here who end up in Columbia for whatever reason, and their support mechanism is someplace else. And if they say, you know what, my support mechanism is here, let's have a program where we can help people get back home. And so that's what this is.
Okay, so do you want to expand upon what augment existing staff to support?
It's adding additional officers to the homeless outreach team, and also adding additional social workers. And so it's going for right now we have two officers and for the hot team we have two officers and one social worker
we just filled the second.
So we just filled the second. So it's that's not a large group. And so I think we're talking about adding an additional a sergeant and two additional officers. Is that what you're looking at?
Potentially, yep.
And then a supervisor and additional two social workers. And plus also having somebody who's a peer, so somebody who's actually been affected by either they weren't unsheltered, who can help also with some of those connections.
So can I ask, one of the responses was about safety, the feeling of safety downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's my reminder, you had that the homeless outreach team, I was kind of like took the place of our downtown unit because they were downtown most of the time anyway, doing the same thing. So is it, where are we with that conversation?
A whole bunch of the slides.
Oh, sorry, okay, never mind then. Sorry, I was like, well, before you added that one, hold on a second.
We have additional slides, yes, ma'am.
Roy.
Is there any way you could possibly elaborate on the homelessness advisory board? I know that we seen it in Madison, but like, what would that look like? Would it be a daytime program? Would it be an evening program? Because I know that there's obstacles and barriers that keep certain unsheltered from attending.
So I think it would be really important in that development of that advisory board to speak with those who can serve on it to find what's going to best meet their needs. The goal is to have individuals with lived experience of homelessness serve in that advisory capacity. They would really need to have some type of stipend to demonstrate that we value their time and their commitment to this. But then from that point, I think we need to be flexible and meet with them, help meet them at a time and a place that works for their group. collaborative. So I think that would be largely determined by them and how they want to organize as an advisory committee.
Yeah, Val.
Can you tell me a little bit about how you plan to host the community meetings, the focus groups on homelessness?
That's a great question. I think one starting point could be to work with agencies that are already engaged with either the population or with providing services to the population. You can start there with the meetings and the focus groups. If you're going to have a focus group, you need, like, what is the ask of them? So otherwise it's a listening session, and you really want to have a little bit, you want to have something that they can react to and give us good input and feedback on that we can take action on. So that would have to be fleshed out a little bit more with what is the end result that we're hoping for with this community engagement, and then form the process around that.
And so,
I was gonna
augment a little bit. So when we were at ICMA, one of the things that, one of the sessions that staff attended was having difficult conversations. And so I'll let Sydney, because she came up with this idea, but it's about engaging our residents to have those conversations that sometimes may be uncomfortable, but you really want to hear from your residents to kind of get their perspective of what we're doing or what we're not doing.
Yeah, so I took a microcertification course called Tackling Wicked Problems Through Community Engagement. It's a very long title, but it was really, really good. And it talked about utilizing our tools and looking at the feedback we're hearing from different channels, whether it's the news media, social media, resident feedback on surveys, and identifying different processes to tackle an issue, and then coming forward to community members and telling them, hey, we know these aren't perfect, but we want you to help shape what the best response at this time for our community is. So it really takes the ownership off of one entity like the city and makes it more of a community approach. We had talked about doing these with our Civic Academy graduates. We've had, four classes. We have around 74, I think, people who have graduated from that. We take them the time to become educated on city resources and departments and their capabilities, and then, like Rebecca said, provide these as well.
So, do you view these focus groups to be, I guess, the average community member, a focus group from people that would be within the not-for-profits providing resources, or a focus group comprised of people who have been homeless or are experiencing homelessness?
And I think when you look at the engagement, it's a combination of. It's you may have several different groups that you're trying to talk to really get an understanding of how our efforts have been or our efforts should be. Another one is our business community and, you know, their concerns and understanding exactly, you know, what does that look like? And so it's multiple groups that you try to engage with, but it's about engaging our community to kind of figure out exactly what our community is actually feels, as opposed to just the survey, but it's more of that process of making sure that we're hearing from people.
I would hope that in that process of trying to pursue these different groups, that we would be persistent and not give up on groups who are unwilling to talk, because not having trust is real. And there are a lot of different individual groups that do not trust government. So we have to be innovative, strategic, and pursue with persistence to make sure that we hear all voices.
Mm-hmm. Before we move on to the next public safety one, question is then, like, are we acting on all of these? Are you looking for direction? You know, what is basically, and are there going to be a request for resources from us, or... Well, what role can council play in that?
Well, I think the biggest part is actually getting to our, when council talks about, you know, their budget priorities. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, taking some of this into mind of, you know, here's some of the things that we're hearing, here's some of the things that we need to put our resources toward. Mm-hmm. And so it's that part of the conversation. If there's things that, you know, you guys say, okay, yeah, we can do this now, then okay, what are some of the things we can do now? I think a lot of this is looking toward especially when you talk about the staffing of increasing our staff, it's more looking at, you know, the upcoming budget.
But that's in October of next year.
It is.
And I think probably some of our residents want to know what are we doing right now. So I think that would be good, is to let us, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, we understand this, but if there's things that you as the professionals on staff need.
Yeah. Well, so like, you know, when we talk about adding a different additional officers to the homeless outreach team, no, it's adding officers. And so it's going through that process. And so we know that from somebody who's starting the academy, going through field training, it's, what, 7-8 months before they're...
Nine to ten is probably more accurate.
Before they're out. And so it's that understanding that nuance. And so it is, when we get to the next slide, I think you'll look at the number of officers that we were able to recruit in 24 and that we're continuing to recruit. And so those numbers are growing, but it will take us a while to get from hiring somebody to them actually being out into the community.
Right.
Ready for the next slide?
Yes, please.
All right, so we've talked about public safety. And so one of the things that we can show is that in 2024, we've recruited 40 police officers. We've opened our own academy, and the opening our academy is to help us kind of streamline our process, so it'll allow us to hopefully get people from the academy to field training onto the street a lot quicker, because they'll be trained on city processes, trained on city equipment, so it's not an additional learning part for them. We haven't implemented the flock camera system, but we're in the process of. That's been approved as a budget amendment, and so we're in the process now of actually engaging with that, putting that infrastructure in. We've increased the number of park rangers. Again, that's in the current budget, but it's hiring those officers to actually have them out in the parks. And improve camera systems and lighting in our parks, and that's something that we've done now and that we're continuing to do.
That's already happening?
Yes.
Yeah, Lisa.
Our recruitment, that's the number recruited, but how many have stayed? I know the number is ever changing.
So right now, out of that 40, I would say 33 are still with us?
Yep. So about 82.5% retention rate.
And then our increased number of park rangers is, we increased 2.
Right, so we're going from 2 to 4.
And one would sense even possibly that we need more than that, and that we would need more police officers recruited too than what we currently have in this current budget, is my sense. I'm not saying we need to go into a budget discussion, but it seems like maybe we might want to talk about reallocating budget items for this year, so we're not waiting until next year to add more.
If that's a discussion that the council wants us to have at a later date, I think the difficulty is understanding what that means. And again, it's still, when we say we need to add additional officers, it's still 9 months for someone starting the academy to being on the street. And so even if you increase the budget, you know, twofold right now, it still will take you a while to get people onto the street. And so
we're not at
100% yet, correct.
But we need to fill those first.
Yeah, we're budgeted at this point.
Yes, sir.
To increase that number right
Yes,
now.
Sir.
Would additional funding for additional officers at this point help us fill those roles more quickly in any way?
I think I'm a consistent optimist. Like, that's my point I'm speaking from. But so right now, as we sit here, we have 25 vacancies, so 2 sergeants and 23 officers. But our capacity now to get people in through by shortening processes, by doing more regular testing with HR, all these things that we've done to compress the process, even doing that, our in-house academy is 20 weeks, and then they have so many, you know, in order to meet CALEA standards, they have to have so many field training shifts if they've never been an officer. So you're easily at 10 months, I mean, safely figure a year to get somebody clear through there if they're a brand new officer. I think, you know, our plan, what I've talked to DeCarlin about bringing to you all is really looking at where we really should be right now versus where we are. And I think since we're getting so close, you know, for many years I would say our normal vacancy rate we sat at was around 8 to 10 officers. And so what I don't want to do is get to 8 to 10 and then go, oh, okay, this is just where we're at, because that should probably be a constant. You're going to have retirements and people that just don't work out or they move. And so we need to have enough spots to keep moving forward. And so we had an actual staff meeting earlier today to talk about bringing forward a plan that says, okay, here's really where we should be right now based on all these different things that we're looking at. How do we get there and in what amount of time? And then how do we also not fall back in the hole? Mm-hmm. Because if we say we really should be at X number, then we still have to figure, well, how many should we really be adding a year just to keep up with average population growth, calls for service, all those kinds of things. And then when you talk about capacity, so we talk about the downtown unit and the homeless outreach team, those things are really not, those are two separate things in my mind. So when the downtown unit started, it was really what I would call like an entertainment district unit. That's really its purpose, I think. Not saying that we shouldn't have people down there during the daytime. I think that's a point we should get to. But even when the downtown unit existed, we still had officers assigned to the beat that encompasses downtown, because those officers' job was really to be out, be visible. It's a piece of crime prevention, right? Just that visibility, having those relationships with business owners, bar and nightclub owners, doing training with their staff. So that's just one whole piece of a smaller puzzle. Because what shouldn't happen is, and what's happening right now is, every Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, and then special occasions like stop day and other things we don't like to talk about, Betsy, everybody's shifting, like we have to shift staff downtown just to kind of keep order, some semblance of order downtown, just because of the number of people downtown now on busy bar nights. And so right now, when there's 12 officers working and you got to shift a third of them just down here just to be present, you're constantly robbing Peter to pay Paul. So I want to talk about capacity of patrol, like where should, how many people should be there ready to answer just calls for service, right? And then do crime prevention type activities. But then these other units like parks, downtown, school resource officers, street crimes officers, those are all different, you know, applications.
Yeah. So at the crux of my question, what I'm trying to determine is, our 40 positions, is that enough essentially excess roles available to stay ahead of the curve in the long term?
No.
And would funding more positions by a budget reallocation, would that give you a head start for 12 months from now? Would that be meaningful to you?
I think the hard part is you don't want to add positions without first understanding what the needs are. And then we have the vacancies that we need to fill now. And so adding to it before we've gotten to that, at least part way to that number, I think, could set us in a place where it looks like, you know, you're not answering the call. And I think ideally the goal is to, as Jill said, to really look at what our resources, what our numbers should be, and develop a plan on how do we incrementally get us there.
And then that will come back to council, yes, if like this is your plan to meet.
Absolutely,
this.
Absolutely.
And Nick?
At the rate at which we're adding officers at this point, how long might it take us to get to the point where we're like 8
So
officers?
One of the things I would like to present to you is kind of just a historical look back at like how did we get here? Right. Mm-hmm. It was really interesting. We have a historical, like a yearbook at the police department that used to be put together that a history committee did. And there's actually a paragraph in that book that we've all looked at recently that talks about how, I don't remember what year it was. Do you, Matt?
1910.
There was a blurb in there about how Columbia was really concerned because its police force was not keeping up with the pace and size of Moberly and Jeff City. And so maybe it goes back that far. I don't have the ability to go back that far in budgets, but what I'm doing is I'm looking back from 2000 forward and saying, okay, how many officers did we have? How many did we add? Because it's important that people understand metrics like adding one police officer is not adding one police officer, right? Because they work 24 hours a day, 365, but they get days off. They go to training. They're sick. They have babies. You know, they have to take care of people. And so really you need to add three to add one. So if you go back, I think I'm about 12 years in right now trying to make this chart for you guys. I think the highest year add we had was 10. So that's 3.3 officers, right, that we added that year, really, on a 24-hour clock. But there were years where we added zero, or we added one, or we added two. And so we didn't even keep up with population growth, because if you look at the population growth of Columbia, it has not been in the negative since I'm not even sure when. So that's where I'm trying to get with. We need to figure out where we should be, and then how do we just keep up and then come up with a number that makes sense of, let's have a goal of adding this many people per year and trying to make sure we keep on pace.
Dakota, can, you know, we get sometimes like the numbers on vacancies and where we are. I know we have in our budget every year kind of like the number of full-time employees to population numbers. I think it would be really good, especially in these three main areas that we're talking about, is what are our staffing levels? Because I think I've mentioned, you know, when we're getting onto roads here in a little bit, the fact that I think what it was like four people have been, I think you told me, Richard, it feels like four people have been added since 2005 or something. But yeah. So,
yeah, and
we've grown by nearly 40% in population.
Yeah, that's one of the assignments I've given to Laquelle and Peyton to work on.
Okay.
And so they are working.
Thank you, fellows.
They are working on that project.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Do you want to go with now what your next things are? Sorry, we've like stepped on like what you're currently doing.
Yeah. And so when we talk about recommendations from staff, so it's reinstitute the downtown unit. It's improved safety in medians and roadways, and so that's a report that will be on for tonight. It's expansion of our homeless outreach team. It's improving sight lines and visibility along our trails and our parks through vegetation management and tree pruning. It's our signage. I mean, one of the things that we know is when people are in the parks, if they see something, if they see a concern, how can we get to a point where they can actually report that immediately? And so it's like having a QR code that someone can pull up on their cell phone that can get them to the Be Heard, the C-Click Fix site, where they can talk about, so I saw rubbish here, or I saw a fence down here, or something that's going to be reported out, so then Gabe's crew can kind of work on addressing that immediately.
Yeah, Roy.
So what up there besides like the downtown unit and the homeless outreach team speaks to crime prevention?
Well, and so it's looking at some of the things that were called out on the survey that says, here's the things that are most important to the residents. One of the things I want Jill to start doing on an annual basis is actually giving the state of policing to kind of talk about what we're actually doing police-wise and what are we doing in order to actually address some of the concerns that residents may have. And so that will be part of that process, is actually talking about everything that we're doing and how does it all line up with, you know, what the expectation of from our community.
Okay. As I was reading these comments, I read that they were talking about downtown, but I also heard, as I was reading this, people were saying they just felt unsafe, not just downtown. So to improve downtown, how are we going to improve some of those areas in Third Ward where every 3 or 4 days there's a shooting?
So this is a capacity issue, right? So if we have, right now we have about 15 or 16 officers per shift, per patrol shift. And you figure a certain percentage of them are going to be, take a vacation day, be sick, whatever, each shift. So we probably average around 12 officers working at a time per shift. And so the big problem there is when you have that few officers working at a time, you may have between, you know, your ward overlaps and different beats, they don't perfectly align. But in that, say, sector, in reality, in theory, there should be anywhere from 3 to 4 officers in that area. But, and really it should be more than that, but on that given shift. But the problem is the minute, you know, a high resource call comes out, all the chess pieces have to move. And so they all get sucked into these other areas. When, if you really have the staffing that you need, ideally, you've got officers that can move around and handle those things, but you have a constant presence in those neighborhoods. So that's where you get that community policing aspect we keep coming back to. When you don't have enough people in an area so they can really stay in their area for their whole shift, that would be the goal. They're constantly, so something happens here, and so the cops that should have been working in this neighborhood are now have to shift over to here because they have to have more people to handle this huge accident on I-70. That never happens, right? Because when those things happen, it sucks a whole bunch of resources. You know, the last incident downtown, there were 11 officers, 2 sergeants, and a lieutenant working that night. So guess where everybody was, right? It's just a capacity issue that we're going to have to build on.
So I think the other kind of question on this one, to Roy's point, is also, you know, I believe it's closed for the hiring of the Office of Violence Prevention kind of coordinator, but I think probably something that also needs to be known is, like, what are some of the activities mm-hmm. that will probably come out of that that kind of gets to, because, you know, a lot of our, some of the issues, you know, with crime, I mean, a lot of it's based on other needs mm-hmm. that families and households have.
Right.
And so how to help talk about the efforts being done there and get out the word. So it kind of goes back to Betsy's original, like, how do we let people know what we're working
on? Yeah, and so it talks about, the things we do to support interaction or the job point. Some of these agencies that are working to address some of the community
root causes
of crime and violence. And so it's addressing that. And so I think, again, that goes back to us putting together better reports that will talk about the things that we're doing and what does it look like and what are those metrics that we're trying to achieve by the things that we're doing. Mm-hmm. And so it's a long way of, you know, getting back to, you know, telling our story. Yeah. Because when you actually look at some of the things that we're doing, we do a lot, but we don't talk about it. And so it's talking about it. I mean, you look at all the programs that you guys funded for ARPA. You know, the amount of resources that have gone to a lot of these different agencies are all about trying to address some of the significant issues in our community. And so, you know, talking about what that looks like and how does that all line up.
Yeah. And I think it's like, you know, it's a yes and, like, right, yeah, yes, we're doing some of the things, and there's still a need.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
So what else can we do to address it?
Some of those conferences that I've been to have put a lot of priority on collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
So highlighting those collaborations and making sure some of those collaborations are happening, because there's a lot of silos. We may have funded a lot of people, but they're also operating individually mm-hmm. and not together.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's one of the biggest tools that once we have the person who's going to be running the office comes in is actually coordinating that effort to kind of break down those silos and making sure that they have those regular meetings. I mean, with the when you look at the Boone County organization to address homelessness, you know, that coalition didn't automatically break down all those silos immediately. You know, it's about having regular meetings and routine conversations with each other. And so it's the same process. It's actually pulling people together to talk about what are we doing and how can we do it correctly and how can we do it effectively to make sure we're supporting each other.
For the next one?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so when we talk about addressing code violations, so one of the things with Neighborhood Services, you know, they handled 5,957 code enforcement cases in FY24. We implemented Dumpster Day. So Dumpster Day is about doing those neighborhood cleanups, and so it's having an event around cleaning up a neighborhood. So you place a dumpster, you do some type of barbecue, you do some significant activity that will allow the residents to help clean up their neighborhood. We have a special document that focuses on significant housing violations. We promote to continue the implementation of our cleanups. And so I think at the last council meeting, or the council meeting before, we talked about the number of volunteer hours that have gone in to actually support, you know, keeping our community clean. And then we've added additional staff to our parks department to actually help with those resources of cleaning up the parks and make sure we keep our parks clean.
Yeah, Nick.
On the code enforcement cases, that's a significant increase over 2023, right? And that's, why is that true? Were there special new initiatives that addressed that?
It's not a significant increase.
It's not.
I think maybe a couple hundred cases.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but barely on par. There's kind of a general trend upwards, but not significantly.
Right. Okay.
We have the same number of code enforcement officers.
Okay.
Related to code enforcement, in our housing study report that you made for us tonight, you recommended additional staff positions. I guess part of what I'm thinking, along with the staff positions for police force, how soon can we get ahead of the curve?
Well, I think that's so. I think the reality is, and I think the mayor kind of alluded to it, is the city has grown significantly. We have not grown staff to keep up. I mean, we have 4 code enforcement officers. When I was in Ferguson, we had 4 code enforcement officers. That's a town of 24,000 versus a town of 130,000. And so that really looks at, you know, what are we doing and what should we be doing? And so it is actually, you know, having that view of if we want to address some of these issues, here's the proper staffing in order to get us there.
Right. And that was clearly outlined in this as well as the report. I understand what we're looking at. I think, like, towards Barbara's comment that, like, the citizens seem to want us to do something now and not in October of next year. And our goals for the housing study are to complete some of those tasks within 0 to 2 years. I think we're going to struggle to do that if we wait until October of next year. So I'm wondering which of these things should or need to result in amendments to the budget.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, that comes from when we start talking about our budget. In January, we're going to talk about budget priorities. Mm-hmm. And so if we're going to start, you know, adding or addressing or changing, it's understanding what that is and what that need is. And so I think that needs to be part of the view is, you know, what should our numbers be, and then how can we get there?
Right. So the budget priorities that we discuss in January would be implemented
in October.
October of next year. October of 2026, right?
2025.
We're in a weird position for next year.
Yeah, it would be up 25, but yeah, the fiscal year.
Oh my God.
26.
I did mean 2025.
But it's a 26 right. budget. But yeah.
It's the 26 budget. That's right. Exactly what I'm saying. Right? So yeah. We have. Okay. We're talking about this now.
Yes.
Right.
We have another scheduled to talk about it in January, mm-hmm. then implemented in October, and it won't hit us until the following 2026.
Right, and there may be opportunities for us to add additional capacity mid-year, and we've done that before, and so we do that on a regular basis. We kind of look at what our needs are, and we'll come back and say, okay, we need to do a mid-year adjustment because we want to add additional position, or we need this additional resource,
yeah.
And so that's part of our processes.
So I'm looking for, like, these opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What
mm-hmm.
are these opportunities? When do they come up? And of these changes that look like we need to address sooner rather than later, what are the most effective ones for us
right.
to implement sooner rather than later?
Right, and that's one of the things that as a staff we really need to look at. We need to look at what our budget capacity is and what additional resources can we add. And Kathy's going to yell at me if I just start adding positions without us having
a
true process.
The departments are right now in the process of putting together their position requests. They have 2 deadlines. One is January 3rd, and that's for a position that doesn't exist today, or a reorganization in January 17th, if they're asking for additional positions that already exist, like police officers. I want 5 more police officers. So they're in the process of putting those requests together right now. And we already have a timeline that allows us flexibility that if we need to do something mid-year, we can. So that's why those deadlines are in January, and then they get to have their meetings with HR and the city manager to discuss those proposals.
Thanks. So I've got Betsy, then Lisa, then Nick. Betsy.
So I was just going to point out that we have increased, not to be, you know, the negative thinker here, but we've increased an awful lot of wages over the last year. And I think we already had a little bit of a discussion about, I think one of the, I don't know where it was, but anyway, the finance director, you know, pointed out that he thought we should be a little judicious in increasing more of these because we need to sort of see how the $10 million or whatever it was that we've already added to the budget to adequately pay people, you know, how that's going to sort of shake out. So I understand what you're saying, and to some extent I agree, although when we're already 24 officers short, I'm not sure it helps to add another 15 officers. Now we're 40 officers short. Still didn't really change how many officers we actually have or how many Jill can,
and that's,
you know,
part of evaluating what the most effective places to do those are. And it sounds like HR has a process for that and options for expedited
and a plan
on acutely needed roles.
Yeah, exactly.
There are also some provisions just to give, understand there's some more flexibility. So if Jill's getting ready to start an academy and we're lucky and we're fully staffed, she could get permission from the city manager to overhire up to 6 months, and then we can come through the council process. So we have that ability should we be blessed and all feel that we want to get some more people in because of the academy. We have a process for that as well. I'm just using Jill as an example. That would be true for any existing classification.
It is nice to know that you guys have that, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
but
that
it's so. I mean,
the city manager can authorize that up to six months, and then we have to go through a process through council to get that officially approved.
Okay, Lisa, and then Nick. We may not be finished. Do you have other suggestions for litter and code enforcement?
Yeah, this is just what we're doing. The next slide will talk about our recommendations.
Okay, excellent. I'll wait for that.
Two slides on recommendations. Okay.
Okay. I'll wait for that before asking any questions.
Sounds good. Nick, did you?
I'll just point out, I think that, you know, while part of our responsibility as a council is fiscal in nature, and as we add staff, there are fiscal impacts to that.
Yep.
I think what you probably are hearing is that there's general support on the part of the council to consider those kinds of additions should staff bring them forward to us. And so I think we're encouraging you in that regard and trusting you to know what's the best thing way forward in each of these areas.
And I think, you know, you kind of hit the nail on it's understanding the fiscal impact. And so as you're adding additional staff, what does that mean? And how do you make sure that you're able to make sure you can support what you're adding on.
Yeah.
And so what does that impact?
Yeah. Well, tell us your recommendations for going forward.
All right. So one of the things, you know, we talked about, you know, the look of our city streets. And so one of the things that while we have street sweepers, we don't have litter control. So we don't have a group of employees that their job is to clean up our roadways and making sure that, you know, we're cleaning up our ditches and having that regularly, routinely done. And so this would look at adding a litter crew. And I think our suggestion would be that we look at our first priority routes, and those are our priority snow routes. I'll let Shane kind of talk about what that looks like.
Sure. There's 282 lane miles of first priority routes. That's the same thing as 110 centerline miles. The other thing I caution you on is I don't think there was anything in the survey that necessarily said that folks know what's a MoDOT roadway and what's a city roadway. There's a lot of MoDOT roadways in town. I can control first priority routes, which is our most traveled roads that I maintain. And so I think that'd be a way to do it as a trial. You could always ratchet that up or down depending on what you feel, how successful you think we're being. But that's how I put that together.
Yeah, because I think a lot of the roadways that a lot of people complain about are not necessarily roads that we control, but they're roads that are in our community.
Lisa and then Valerie. I think that this would be a huge help because I'm trying to remember the report, but I think we had 8,000 volunteer hours that picked up over 10,000 bags of litter throughout our community. So if we had focus on some of those hard-to-get areas, those crews can be out helping in other focused areas where, I mean, I could see that being incredibly helpful to the huge amount of litter that we have throughout our entire community, and it's in every single part of town.
And a lot of the first priority routes are those roads that you think of that, in general, if we had our way, we don't have driveways on them, have a lot of fences that back up to them. So as you can imagine, people don't go to the other side of the fence to pick up the cup that's, you know, in the right of way. And so that's why we concentrated there. I think the volunteers really do a good job on some of the those lower priority routes, or the neighborhood associations having a cleanup day, those kind of things. It's those locations that don't necessarily get hit.
So would Providence Road be a road that you would
MoDOT.
That would be MoDOT, and that would be volunteers on that?
It's MoDOT south of Vandiver, north of Vandiver is us.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you had your hand up,
I did. Roy might have been before me, though.
So my question would be, knowing that some of our main roads, like Business Loop 70, Providence, Clark Lane, those we don't own those roads, what would our collaborative efforts look like in order to address those roads? Because a lot of people, when they're speaking of trash, those are some of our main roads they're riding down. So what are we? What does that collaborative effort look like?
Sure. We haven't had that conversation with MoDOT yet, partly because we wanted to have this conversation with you all first. So, I mean, now that this survey is public, that's one of the things we'll sit down with MoDOT and talk about. Historically, they've had, like an adopt-a-highway program and things like that for your more major routes, like I-70 and 63 and things like that. But a lot of that depends on groups that have interest in a particular roadway. If they had interest in a section of Clark Lane or, one of MoDOT's, whatever that is, that's a project that MoDOT has. So, I mean, that's the first thing I want to understand, is if that's still a valid program for them and if they're encouraging that. When we start to get on MoDOT's roads, we have to have permission to be there. They're a lot more higher traveled areas. I worry about my staff and making sure we protect them when they're cleaning up those areas. So that has to be a factor as well.
Quick clarification. When we say cleaning up roads, are we specifically speaking roads or just the sideways?
The right of way. The right of way.
Valerie.
Yeah. Roy and I are on the same wavelength tonight. I definitely wanted to hear about collaboration with MoDOT. Litter is one aspect of that, but maintenance of roads is another one, especially ones that have elements that are substandard. And I know you all meet with MoDOT. I'd like to, make sure that we are advocating for the maintenance of the streets and not using MoDOT as, a fallback if we can't. I'd rather be proactive in asking them to handle that. The other question that I had attached to that, another one, surely they wouldn't have a problem with us picking up litter on the street. I mean, it doesn't change the maintenance of the street, right?
It does not, but we'd have a truck with a vacuum trailer on it, and we'd have to have a crash attenuator behind it to protect folks.
Yeah.
So I'm slowing down traffic on major roadways in order to do that.
Yeah.
And so that's something MoDOT's going to want to know about. And so there's that balance, right, of like how much time do you want us to spend on those roadways doing those things in MoDOT's right of way, and how much of that should be done by MoDOT.
Yeah.
And
ideally it's MoDOT.
Yeah.
Ideally.
Yeah.
This is an area that I haven't been aware of at all. So do we have that kind of vacuum sweeper available?
No.
Yeah.
Not. I do not.
But we approved two.
Right.
But those street sweepers are different from what we're talking about. I mean, street sweepers are going down your street. This is going into your ditch area, that grassy area, the area where, like around fence rows where trash may accumulate. And so it is a different type of equipment.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And then lastly, I think we're correlating this strongly with litter pickup because there were short answers that cued in on the litter pickup. The question sounds like it could be overall maintenance as well as litter pickup affecting that. And I guess just as a guiding focus, I think I'd like us to look into addressing some of the overall maintenance in addition to the litter.
Sure. I mean, one thing I would tell you is that This budget year is the first time that the pavement preservation program's been funded fully. And so that's going to have an impact on condition of the roadways. I would also say that from my perspective, when you look at how we compare to the Plains region and the U.S. region, all seven public works items were in the top 10 in difference. And so it's that quality of city streets question, and Nick, you asked this, you know, point blank, and I'm glad you did, because I don't know what that means, to be 100% honest with you. And so, but I look at this, and when you compare us to our peers, we're in really good shape. It's this quality of city streets. And so what gets tied into that? Is it some of these other factors that we're talking about outside of litter that are generating those comments? And so I think it's all of this together is what improves those scores.
Am I correct in understanding that the downtown CID pays for litter cleanup?
Well,
every day.
We partner with the CID. The CID does collect some tax revenue, and so they do have an organization that does that cleanup, but the city partners with that, so we pay a portion of that.
I'm going to do a quick time check. So we have about 15. Yeah. I think because we had one cancellation, we could potentially do 20, 25, but I just want to make sure that you have time, or if we need to talk about this at the next.
No, we only have one more slide. And that's just, you know, talking about our parks and creating a, you know, trail maintenance and making sure that we have a program for that. And then one of the things we're talking about doing is partnering with a local contractor to help with some of our cleanup efforts and restoration when we clean up a camp.
Do we have a local contractor?
No, we do not. And so that's one of the things that MoDOT does. The group that they work with is out of Kansas City, I believe. And so it's putting a term of supply contract out there to find somebody to help with those efforts.
Well, I want to say we're appreciation for these items that are already presented as possibilities of ways that we can respond. And I want to encourage focus groups idea and any other way that we can help to accentuate what we understand from this survey already. And I think, you know, Shane pointed to that. When I read through those comments, so often my question is, tell me more. Mm-hmm. Please tell me more about that. And I think it's important for us to try to get some of that. We have a lot of hard data. I think we need some soft data to help us with that. The quantitative and the qualitative together will tell a better story. Mm-hmm. And then I know that we're working on telling our story more, and I just encourage that in an ongoing fashion. That I do think that a lot of this is about is telling what's going on so that people have a better understanding of that, while we're responding to those concerns at the same time.
And so I think, you know, as we go toward looking toward the future, I think, you know, I think Robert kind of alluded to it. You know, are we doing another survey next year, or are we doing it in 2 years? You know, what does that look like? And from a council perspective, what would you like to know? We don't have to answer that today, but it's understanding that, you know, if we're going to. What should be our rhythm for surveys? Should it be annually? Should it be every 2 years? Should it be every 3 years? No, what does that look? And then there's different things you want us to drill down on to get additional information to kind of help you understand exactly what some of our residents' concerns or thoughts are.
I've got Lisa and then Roy.
I think that the survey is just absolutely fantastic, and that what we can do to hone in and make sure that, you know, I'm concerned that we're trying to do so much mm-hmm. that we're not focusing on, like, these three main things, like putting our energy where we need to. And if we need to make some changes in the middle of the game to make sure that we can focus on the three top priorities here, I want to do all I can to make sure that, you know, that I have, that you have, like, support, and I would imagine the support of, you know, the majority to say we've listened to the community, these are concerns that we're hearing, I'm hearing, and we want to hone in. And I think that it's just important that I do my best to try to clarify. I'm concerned that we're just trying to do way too much when we need to be honing in on, like, these three main things.
seeing that I might not be here next time this conversation happens, I want to get my opinion now. I think that we should do this yearly because we do a budget yearly. So as we are attaching these priorities to the budget, we need to hear from our constituents on a regular basis. So I would recommend doing this on a yearly basis and seeing if these three priorities that are here now are still the same within a year.
Mm-hmm. And I'll just, to that point, you know, before 19, we were doing it annually. I mean, since 2013, you know, we have been doing it. And I know the pandemic, I imagine that was part of it. But I think it is helpful. And the timing's never going to be perfect as far as time of year. You know, I know I was surprised at seeing the disappointment in snow removal since it didn't, like, snow last year. But that's historically, you know, then we used to do it in February, and everyone hated the snow removal because we had snowpocalypse, and it was just crazy. So we know the timing's not perfect on this. I think the question then from council is, what happens next? How do we make sure that the cadence continues with this? And so what are your thoughts or your plans for giving us feedback on what are these short-term ones, you know, as we're talking about priorities? How does that influence the mid-year? How can we help get the communication out on what is going on? Do you have an idea as far as, like, what happens next?
Yeah, so so I know Sydney's been working on developing a communication plan. So how do we communicate outward? What are we doing? What does it look like? And how do we make sure that we have that constant cadence? And so it's creating that. Okay. It's talking about our priorities. And so if there's things that we can budget for mid-year, what does that look like? If there's things that has to go into the next year's budget, what does that look like? I mean, one of the things that we're going to talk about at some point is additional revenue sources. And so as we're looking at adding, you know, how do we add and to make sure that we can add the number of either employees, resources, equipment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to make sure that it's being budgeted for correctly. And so that's all part of that conversation. I think the first part is the communications plan. And what does that look like? How do we communicate? What are some of the focus groups that we're going to have? How do we better engage? And then have that process. And then also we can come back and we can report out some of the things that we're working on. And so, you know, we just added an additional resource to the divert team. And so now we have somebody who's on board helping with that. And so does that increase our numbers? Does that increase our outreach? What does that look like? And so, you know, having those constant reports on what are we doing and how can we make sure that what we're doing is what we should be doing.
And the dashboard will probably play a role.
The dashboard will play a huge part of us understanding the survey and understanding how we can kind of focus that survey to particular areas. And so, like, we talk about safety. You know, is there a particular area where people feel that we are not doing enough for safety-wise? I mean, we know what the number was, but is there a particular area that we need to put a lot of concentration in? And if it is, then we can go out and start meeting with those neighborhoods and start having those conversations about what do they need in order for them to feel safe in their neighborhood? What should we be doing? How can we, you know, make sure that they're part of that conversation to help support our efforts?
So can we request then that for part of the, kind of like in the monthly city manager's report or whatever it is, they kind of have a piece about, here's also, you know what I mean, if there is a cadence, something happening, I think that's a good way to let us know. But then obviously something that's public facing on what's happening. Yeah.
I could wanted to remind everyone, you do not have to use the exact same survey the next time you do it. Good. So you're not locked into anything. It's completely flexible. I think there's an argument to be made that you want to keep a base set of questions so you have the benchmarking.
Yeah.
But let's say you take homelessness and you really want to dive into that, or street maintenance, and you really want to dive into that. We can customize questions and really, you know, get a clearer field of fire, if you would, in terms of what the issues are that your residents are experiencing. So don't think that, well, the choice is we continue to do exactly what we did before, or I think that's something that the city kind of went away from it for one of the reasons was because they felt like it was becoming kind of routine. We're asking the same information. You don't have to. And that's what I want to make sure you understand. You can make this, and it's tailor-made. Working with Brian, and we already had discussion about, well, we could ask, you know, different questions about this particular topic to elaborate and give you more information and refine your strategies based on the feedback you get from the citizens.
Yeah. Well, appreciate that and the knowledge, and appreciate all the staffs have put into ideas on what to do, because, like, at the end of the day, like Nick said, like, council, you know, we are not the ones who are doing the day-to-day. We want to know what resources are needed and what ideas are there so that we can then give them. Yeah. Appreciate that. All right, well, done with this part.